I used to have a Facebook, but I deleted it once I started applying for colleges, because I heard, like, this whole rumor that colleges can, like, find their way into your page and find these details about you.
As with everything, there's a benefit, and then there's the liability as well.
Yeah, like, a lot of my friends, they have a lot of exposure, like, of skin, and we actually have to talk to one of my friends telling her, you should tone it down a bit.
An interesting comparison, your Facebook exposure to exposure of your skin to the sun, because in both cases you can get burned. But I don't think there's any argument that once you join a social networking site, to a certain extent you're giving up at least a portion of your privacy.
The moment you start emailing, for heaven's sake.
Absolutely. And it's really not easy to get that put back into the box, and especially on Facebook. Here's the way it goes. A user has to end up clicking through more than 50 privacy buttons and choose from more than 170 options to reset the default privacy buttons on Facebook. Now, Facebook is holding a privacy summit at some point to rejigger, I guess, their privacy policy. But it leads us to this idea of, is our idea of what should be private and what should be public, is that changing? And do we have a different idea now about our right to privacy? To talk about this, we've got Jeff Jarvis, a journalism professor at the City University of New York and author of What Would Google Do? And Amber Case, also with us. She's a cyborg anthropologist and a tech consultant. Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Good morning.
So Jeff, we talk about privacy, the right to privacy, which we're not guaranteed under the law, but we do have this idea that to a certain extent, people shouldn't be allowed to intrude into our personal lives.
What surprises me, I'm researching a new book called Public Parts about publicness, and I found that the idea of privacy law really only emerged in 1890 in a piece by Louis Brandeis, which talked about the venal press coming after you with cameras. So interestingly, technology is what leads us to fears about privacy.
He didn't want them taking pictures of his daughter at her wedding.
Precisely.
Okay, so how about our historical attitudes towards privacy? Those have to have evolved as well.
Well, the whole idea of privacy, the root of the word is privation from being public. What interests me too is the idea of publicness and what it means to be public. Back in the day, back in the 15th century and before, you were only public if you were a public figure of stature. And then we all got to have a public. We got to start to make publics through theater and presses and so on. And now, of course, the internet lets any of us make a public, and Facebook is a tool to that end.
Okay, so Amber, there is a certain upside to giving up privacy on Facebook, right? You become a public person. You know, you have your own little paparazzi on your Twitter feed or whatever. So that is that the value that people get out of sharing these things on Facebook?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the issue. Really, when you're sharing something on Facebook, you get this idea of immediate feedback. So you get these social rewards that are often faster and more widespread in the digital world than in real life. So if you say something, you get plus one like, plus one comment, or, you know, it can go viral and people are sharing it. And these rewards actually are tangible, quantifiable rewards that last for a really long time. So if you think about it, you're kind of playing a video game and becoming a micro-celebrity because you're getting, you know, these plus one followers and these points. And you're also, instead of talking one person to one person or one person to maybe 10, you're getting this entire wide audience. So these social rewards are really instantaneous and really adrenaline rushing.
But Amber, call me old-fashioned. Is micro-celebrity an insult or a consummation devoutly to be wished?
I think it's this kind of psychological need to, in this really overarching information world, to feel important for a few seconds. That instead of having this like lifetime profession that these people are going into, it's more of this micro value type thing that happens.
I think it's also more than that. I think that we get benefit when we make ourselves public. The internet is a connection machine. We can meet friends and do work and do all these things because of this. Our wisdom of the crowd can come together only if we share our wisdom. We can demand transparency of companies and governments by, you know, seeing this new ethic of publicness. I think we talk too much. We have a mania right now about privacy in this country. And I agree with the need to control your identity and your life. But we also have to talk about the benefits of publicness when we make these decisions.
Okay, but Amber, I mean, with all due respect to what Jeff's saying, there's so much protest now over their Facebook policy. It has more words in it than the U.S. Constitution, almost 6,000 words. Their frequently asked questions page about privacy has 45,000 words in it. And there are people boycotting Facebook over this. So, Amber, there clearly is a discussion to be had over whether or not Facebook has oversteps its bounds by making everything public and you have to go in and reset it to private.
Right, and I think that's one of the big issues, because they didn't really warn anyone that they would just turn off all of the privacy. And so I think people are still getting used to the idea of a second self. Now people have to deal with managing an analog self and also a digital self, and they have to groom the digital self and represent themselves online. And I think it's kind of like the idea of when people first started living in houses, you know, they started living in communities, they had to build up fences and privacy, and they had these laws. And it wasn't really a big deal until people started going in and stealing each other's stuff, or, you know, and looking into each other's windows and things like that.
Jeff, do you think that our online behavior is affecting the way we act offline? Are we becoming more able to share things offline?
I think so. I think we're becoming more social, and we really see the benefit of this, and that there is this idea that we can make our own public. Facebook's mistake, I think, was that it conflated sharing with publishing. On Facebook, we could make our own limited public, kind of a private public, our society, and share with that. On blogs, we share with the whole world. And what Amber's saying is quite right. They changed too much of what we were sharing with a small group and decided, if you want to share it, why not with everyone? Mark Zuckerberg sees a benefit in us connecting in society, and I agree with that benefit, but I'm not sure Facebook is the best vehicle for that.
Jeff Jarvis, journalism professor at the City University of New York, author of What Would Google Do?, and Amber Case, cyborg anthropologist and tech consultant.
You're such a wonk, Jarvis. Zuckerberg, that's the Facebook guy. Zuckerberg.
Yes. Sorry, yes. I should have done the idea.
Now it's time to get you involved, because we're doing a privacy experiment. Here's what you do. Find a stranger on the internet, and maybe they're on Facebook or Twitter, and just go face them face-to-face. Find them. Use their picture. Find out where they go using Foursquare or other networking sites. And ask them, what benefit do you get from sharing your information publicly? If you take us up on this, we'll report on it on the show and tell us what happened at thetakeaway.org.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.